On to the next question. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Why is
it not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying
yes.
Sorority girl. Just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is, there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite?
The whole agenda is to create a one-world government, and the goals of the banking industry, not just the Federal Reserve System, but the private banks in Germany and England, all over Italy, all over the world, they all work together. They're all central banks, and they're all part of the Communist Manifesto. You know, central banking is one of the major planks of the Communist Manifesto. We talk about America being a capitalistic country, but yet at the same time we have a central bank that plans everything for us. Right, and the graduated income tax is another plank of the Communist Manifesto, right? So right there you have two major planks of the Communist Manifesto that have been brought in because of the Federal Reserve System, okay? So the ultimate goal that these people have in mind is the goal to create a one world government. Now, they've taken over our government, both Republicans and Democrats. There's no difference anymore between the two parties. They control both parties. Doesn't matter to them which one wins, because who's ever running for president will be someone they anoint, okay? Whether it's Hillary Clinton or John McCain running for president next year, whichever, they're going to be people that are going to do what they want them to do. And the fact of the matter happens to be that you can't win an election unless you have enough money to win. They make sure who gets the money. It was necessary for them to take over America, take away our gun rights of freedom to bear arms, and create a country where we become slaves, because once they take over America, the rest of the world becomes a lot easier for them.
November 16, 1933, the day we recognized the Soviet Union. Its purpose, its open stated goal, its strategy was to overthrow the rest of the world and impose the teachings of Marx. and then Leninism, and then we get to Stalin. Now, four American presidents, beginning in 1917, refused to recognize this revolutionary government, knowing full well that you could not have, quote, normal, or even normal without quotes, relations with a government calculating towards your own destruction. This was obviously, you could not have agreements, they would be broken, you could not have any kind of deals or alliances. And so this government was shunned by the United States until 1933. And that was the year in November when Franklin Roosevelt, then in his very first term, recognized the Soviet Union. In order to perpetuate this alliance, to continue relations with the Soviet Union, which became really an obsession of American governments from that day forward, the American government had to learn to lie to the people, tell us lies about communism, tell us lies about Stalin, tell us lies about the Soviet Union. And I think in some way, these ills that we see in our culture today, I think have their roots in this relationship that Roosevelt himself believed in, convergence. And I suppose that the money people you're talking about came out of that same mindset and were promoting that same mindset and were indeed the influence on Roosevelt in making this decision. Given the record of the Bolshevik government coming in terms of body count, in pre-revolutionary times, the Tsarist government executed about 17 political prisoners a year. Compare this to the Spanish Inquisition, which at its height destroyed 10 people a month. But in those early revolutionary years, the Soviet, the new Bolshevik secret police, executed without trial more than 1,000 people per month. Later in the 1930s, Stalin was killing tens of thousands of people per month. And yet the United States rushed into alliance, rushed to recognize the Soviet government under Roosevelt during World War II, rushed into this alliance. And so you go again to these advisors, many of whom we later learned, confirmed after archives opened on the dissolution of the Soviet Union in 1991, we later learned many of these senior officials in the United States government were working for Stalin. I don't feel the same way about that war anymore, and I'm convinced that if my father were still living, that he would also greatly question what he had actually participated in. Because when you look at that post-war map, what happened? There is a devastated Germany, and in that vacuum, there is a new, thriving, powerful, U.S.-supplied Soviet empire in its place. I think most Americans would tell you they're still living in a capitalist free country with all manner of liberty. The brainwashing, the conditioning that has been so successful and has demoralized us is definitely bringing us to this point of a certain kind of tyranny. It does not have the gulag, it does not have people knocking at the door with guns yet. It does, however, make examples of truth tellers. It makes examples of people who cross the line. And this serves to tyrannize us. And we are experiencing this. And yet, you ask most people, they'll say we won the Cold War. Well, I say, look, 100 million dead after the communist century, and Republicans who have a majority in Congress cannot muster the votes to repeal and defund socialized medicine. Who won the Cold War?
The communist rules for revolution read like this: corrupt the young, get them away from religion, get them interested in sex, make them superficial, and destroy their ruggedness. Always preach true democracy, but seize power as fast and as ruthlessly as possible. Communist rules for revolution. By encouraging government extravagance, destroy its credit, produce fear of inflation with rising prices and general discontent. Promote abortion, homosexuality, lesbianism, witchcraft. Cause the restriction of all firearms on some pretext with a view of confiscating them and leaving the population helpless. That is communism. Let me tell you what communists do. You want to know when you've got a communist? This was the plan passed from Joseph Stalin to various communist district organizers. in helping America self-destruct. Religion, discredit all Christian creeds. What do we got today? We've got a cult cartoons, a cult in the bookstore, and a cult movies and a cult videos. In the ethical area, corrupt morality by advocating promiscuity and degenerate perversion. During the early part of Bill Clinton's administration, under Jane Alexander, American taxpayers financed a 3-foot mound of synthetic excrement, a sculpture of two women engaging in oral sex, a film actually showing one man pushing his head into another man's rectum, a photo of a man with a bullwhip in his rectum, a film depicting Jesus Christ as a topless woman. Wake up! This is communism!
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. Its dissenters are silenced. Its dissenters are silenced. Its dissenters are silenced.
Council on Foreign Relations is supposedly just a think tank addressing the issues that face America. But the Council on Foreign Relations is a front for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created. In 1891, it pursues his goal of creating a world government where there'd be no more wars, there'd be no more hunger, there'd be no poverty. Everything would be wonderful and people would live happily ever after. That was basically the dream that Cecil Rhodes had. The Royal Institute for International Affairs, it works closely with the monarchy. Parliament over in England is simply a front. They don't make the decisions. However, the Council on Foreign Relations is no longer the primary organization. Basically, the existence of this organization was concealed. Very few people knew about it. David Rockefeller controls trillions of dollars. For 15 years, pursuing this globalist program, decided they needed another organization, the Trilateral Commission. And the Trilateral Commission was not only American, it was international. There's a small elite group made up of bankers and financiers and educators who believe in this concept of world government. England and America always work together and put into positions of power dictators who will go along with this idea of world government. And we've recently seen them topple the government of Egypt, of Tunisia, of Libya. They've done it in Iraq, they've done it in Afghanistan. They create war after war after war because they want to bring about world peace. From 1977 to 2004, every president of the United States and or vice president of the United States, sometimes both, has been a member of the Trilateral Commission. That was from 1977 to 2008. That would be Jimmy Carter, his vice president, Ronald Reagan's vice president, George Herbert Walker Bush, member of the Trilateral Commission, Bill Clinton and Al Gore, Dick Cheney was a member of the Trilateral Commission, George W. Bush was not a member, Barack Obama is not a member of the Trilateral Commission. Barack Obama picked 11 of them to actually surround him. Hillary Clinton is not a member of the Trilateral Commission, but her husband was.
We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing.
The Trilateral Commission controls the American government. Now, the American people don't know that. Certainly when Hillary Clinton announced that she was going to resign and Barack Obama suggested we put in Susan Rice as the Secretary of State, Susan Rice came to the membership role to the Trilateral Commission, discredited because of some remarks she made. So they picked another person for the Secretary of State in the United States. His name is John Kerry, and you never guess where he came from. Senator John Kerry, member of the Trilateral Commission. The elite rule America, they rule England, they rule the world today. You can go to their website at trilateral.org, and where, of course, you can see their logo. It's made up of a circle with three curved arrows. If you look closely, you'll see their sixes. You'll see the 666 joined together in the center by an upside-down broken cross. This is an occult organization. Cecil Rhodes was involved in the occult. The people who joined with him in this pursuit of a world government were involved in the occult. And it is these occult organizations, both the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission, which are the major force behind this move towards world government. And if you're coming at this from a Christian point of view, you realize, of course, it's been prophesied for thousands of years we would establish a world government, we would reconstitute the government that Nimrod tried to produce about 200 years after the Great Flood. And of course, Nimrod wanted to build the Tower of Babylon to reach the heavens. He wanted to replace God with a one world government under his control. And of course, that failed. This movement continues today. There were secret societies at the time of Nimrod. There are secret societies today. There really is a mystical world out there. There's a supernatural world. There really are supernatural forces.
Sarah McKechnie is taking her professional and spiritual journey through life with her husband, Dale McKechnie, who is vice president of the Lucius Trust.
They probably thought Lucifer, Lightbearer, was a good name for their fledgling publishing company when they started to publish the books that Alice Bailey was writing, the books they saw as bringing light to humanity. But within 2 or 3 years, they decided to change the name of the company to Lucius Publishing Company. Lucius being from the same Latin term meaning of light, trust of light, publishing company of light, and that's the name we've had since about 1925. Now, the reference to Lucifer comes from Blavatsky's description of Lucifer in the accurate sense of the term, which is of Latin origin. It means literally light bearer. So Lucifer to Blavatsky was one of the great sacrificial beings who descended to earth. That's where we get the idea of the fall of the angels. That was the descent of the solar angels to Earth as an act of sacrifice on our behalf.
But is it not so that Lucius Trust, Alice Bailey, was looking for specifically the prophet Maitreya?
The Maitreya is a being, an entity. We're told that when this entity, this avatar, returns, that he will bring humanity a new understanding of the spiritual will. But first, we have to demonstrate that the energy of love is sufficiently anchored in human consciousness to make us able to bear a greater spiritual will. You can imagine a powerful will without sufficient love would be wrongly used.
I'm sure you can see straight away that this is an androgynous performer. This is part of the agenda in that the fallen are androgynous. But this is Baphomet, and you'll see that Baphomet is androgynous. They've got the female breasts and the male phallic here. This is work by Aleister Crowley. This is Baphomet again with the wings like the phoenix. And also, remember, you saw this at the Olympics, 2012 Olympics, that they had the rise of the phoenix as well.
You threw me down, but I'm gonna fly.
And now you see that she's gained wings in the background, flame wings. Once I transform, once I'm reborn. Right, now let's have a look at this in a second. This is hell, guys. This is coming from hell.
Do you have any words at all?
I do. This night is dedicated to everyone who believes in a future of peace and freedom. You know who you are. We are unity, and we are unstoppable.
Lucis Trust is a non-governmental organization that has an affiliation with the UN. How does your esoteric practice interface with the figures and policies of world government? It's a bit of a reaching question.
The UN isn't a form of government. It's a platform for the governments of the world to come together and try to work out in common ground a solution to problems. A fairly successful resolution might be the way they are approaching the problems in the Middle East. Although, again, not everybody would agree with, say, the stand taken in Libya.
It is a big idea, a new world order, where diverse nations are drawn together in common cause to achieve the universal aspirations of mankind: peace and security, freedom, and the rule of law.
We saw, he died.
Did it have anything to do with your visit?
No. Oh, I'm sure it did.
1991 closed-door meeting of fellow internationalists, billionaire and former CFR chairman David Rockefeller praised his media allies, but his confidence that his words would not leave the room was later broken.
We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government.
We don't want your world government! Leave Chile right now! Leave Chile, okay? Leave Chile! Your family is the most disgusting in the world, you know? You're afraid of the Chile, okay? You're afraid of the Chile, depending with him and this. Your world government will fail, okay?
We'll be right back.